She deserves to marry a king.
Especially after she'd put so much work into him. That amused the other warrior.
And if you are not named Ran, Ezel must die,
Maddox said easily.
I will kill him and take the Ragusian throne. You would be taking your bride's throne,
Keeler laughed.
She is next in line after Ezel.
And would be queen of that realm in truth then after they destroyed that sorcerer.
Tola, then,
Maddox decided. Keeler grinned.
And would you shave your beard as a Tolahi man does?
With a bare chin.
I could not. My bride would have nothing to yank when she wants my attention. I think she would,
Keeler said dryly. So she would, and did often, Maddox grinned. Flushed and happy, Yvain rode back from the ridge that overlooked the plain. Shall I hunt our suppers? As she had every day since they'd been off the ship, for themselves and the dozen other riders who'd remained in their group.
You should.
Her gaze swept the nearby grasses and flowers. What do I look for here?
Many animals are underground, so require a stick instead of an arrow,
he told her.
Those above ground are small, so many times all you will see is the shivering fire bloom.
There, Ardal pointed. Yvain aimed, loosed. Within range, she always hit. Danel rode over and swept up a grass rodent. Murmurs came from watching warriors. They had seen that display many times on this journey, yet never did it fail to impress, nor did they grow tired of it. With a grin, Yvain looked to Maddox. I should try for a drapen next and boast a claw around my neck. He shook his head. The simple kill was not why their claws had such significance, because drapa were no harder or easier to hunt than any other dangerous animal. Instead, the drapa claw boasted either surviving a pack or being such a stealthy hunter that the pack did not know what happened.
Make certain to count your arrows first.
What do you mean?
Drapa are not like other animals we have hunted. If you injure or kill one, the rest do not flee. The drapa will attack, so be certain that you have enough arrows to fell an entire pack.
I see. She eyed the claws around his neck. Did you have to fight off a pack?
I did not fight them off. Three of these, I happened upon one, and it was as surprised as I was.
Then he survived as many Parsathians did.
If you ever have not enough arrows, lie upon the ground as if dead. They will ignore you.
You have done so? Maddox nodded.
Many times.
Her gaze turned to the horizon again. Faint creases formed in her brow. How far to the Scourge?
4 days' ride. You see it?
The head and shoulder, I think.
It is turned on its side.
Silver-fingered Rani had done so when she'd split its belly open to retrieve her dragon. Yvain straightened slightly. There are riders coming from that direction.
How many?
2, a woman and a girl. The girl is even younger than Torek, I think, though she is dressed as a warrior. The woman is perhaps the same age as Bannock and is a warrior. She wears drapa skin armor and her hair in braids. A ragged crescent scar is on her right shoulder. Keeler let out a whoop that nearly startled Yvain out of her saddle.
That is my mother and sister,
he told her when she looked at him in surprise.
Torek must have sought her out and told her we are following behind.
They met Keeler not long after with laughter and embraces. Nami approached Maddox more soberly. Her embrace was tight. She was the leader of the Firebloom tribe, a position his own father once had. Many times in his childhood his family had visited hers. No words were left unsaid. His throat thick, Maddox told her.
There were none.
She patted his arm. That is the most we can ask for. He nodded, then introduced her to Yvain, who had carefully dismounted and joined them.
My bride.
Nami took Yvain's hands in her own, met her gaze briefly.
I have seen those eyes before. You are Nyset's heir.
I am.
And you are to unite us against the destroyer.
I will try, Yvain said. Maddox asked,
Torek has told you of our journey?
I would hear more, Nami said.
I will tell you as we ride,
he promised. Ciri took her place beside Yvain, Maddox noted, with Bannock on the other side. When he lifted her into the saddle, Yvain's attention had already been captured by the girl. I have heard that you are a better warrior than even your brother, Yvain told her. Keeler's sister grinned. So I am. I am learning to hunt, Yvain said. But I am not accustomed to the plains or detecting prey. I need someone to be a guide for my eyes. Will you do me the honor? Ciri flushed with pleasure. I will. A good match they made. a young warrior eager to demonstrate her skills and a new warrior eager to learn them. Nami's solemn voice drew Maddox's gaze away from the pair as they rode ahead.
Is it truth that she spoke a lie?
If Torek had told her that, then no doubt he'd also told Nami the circumstances of it. Yet Maddox knew that when he stood before each tribe's elders, he would have to explain it again and again, and would have to find the words to sway them in Aven's favor. As one of those elders rode beside him now, he might as well begin practicing those words.
She lied to an enemy to save her life and the lives of her people.
Nami huffed out a laugh.
You would take your enemy as a bride? I would have no other, and she is no enemy now but a fierce and clever ally.
Her eyes narrowed.
So you would make a mere ally our queen? She will be one of the finest warrior queens the Parseth has ever known, and our marriage will strengthen both of our realms. A warrior queen?
Nami scoffed.
She sits her horse uneasily, and a girl teaches her to hunt. She is not the bride your mother would have chosen.
What did that matter now?
Yvonne is stronger than she appears.
Dismissively, she said.
Then you are clearly blinded by your love for her. No.
Other emotions had blinded him.
Love has made me see her more clearly.
Her expression softened, yet her gaze was still sharp, her inquiry not done.
Then tell me of that strength and why she would be a fine queen.
So Maddox did. Chapter 34. Yvonne. Yvonne had learned that even her vision could not see everything, for the ever-moving horizon hid the world beyond it. She knew not how far away the horizon was, except that it was more distant when she was on a tower or a ridge. And when she stood upon the ground, ridges and towers could be seen from farther away as well, even if she could not see what lay at their base. So when they entered the Parsathian camp, she knew not how far the horizon stretched. Yet in every direction there were warriors and horses, spread out so that there was grazing and room for all. And not just the Parsathian army, she learned, though not much difference could she see in the camps. For many of the warriors who had gathered in Kilrun to name the new Ran had accompanied Enox and the army to the glass fields, with news that even more Parsathians were coming. Many slept under the open sky, but studding the landscape were also tents of mammoth hide, bleached pale by the sun. All smelled of horses and grass and cooking fires. They rode toward the largest tent, where the leaders of each tribe and clan had gathered. Into that tent, Maddox went along with Nami and Ciri and five members of his dragon. Only Maddox remained outside to watch over Yvonne, who had been introduced to many of the tribe's leaders outside, but was not allowed admittance into the tent, for she was not Parsathian, or yet married to Maddox. She sat with Maddox at a nearby fire instead, eating roasted meats and speaking with the warriors who joined them, and trying so very hard not to let her frustration at being excluded from the meeting burn hot upon her tongue. So far she had come, so much she'd set in motion with a letter to Parsath. Now no say did she have. Her future lay in Parsathian hands. And although she tried to tell herself that this was no different than Dram, when she could make use of a warrior and his strength, not truly could she persuade herself of it. For that battle against her brother had been truly of steel and blades. Yet this was a throne room, where she should be most useful to her warrior. Except that it was also a throne room that one day would be his. She had to trust that Maddox could fight this battle, but she'd have rather fought it at his side. At least there was much to learn outside that tent. The warrior she and Bannock spoke with told them that a company of Sissian soldiers had indeed left the outpost and headed north, accompanied by larger numbers of Ruguzian soldiers. Jalen had been identified among them, with some certainty, especially after Yvonne mentioned the scar on his neck. Her father's army had come as far north as the Scourge, and not yet farther. That news turned her gaze south. She could not see the soldiers that her father had brought with him, or the base of the Scourge, yet that giant demon's corpse was in clear sight, only a day's ride distant. Yet the Scourge was not all that near. To Bannock, she asked, "We must be close to Temra's altar?" The old warrior's brows pulled together.
"Close to it?"
"To where Rand Mantic stood and implored the tribes to unite." His confusion cleared.
"We are near that spot, but Temra's altar is—"
He made a sweeping gesture.
"Everywhere."
"Everywhere?"
"Everywhere."
He pounded his fist into the ground.
"This is Temra's altar. That is why we build no temples to other gods upon it. All of it is hers."
Her chest hollowed. "Temra's altar is the earth?" He nodded.
All of the Earth or just Parsath?
Anywhere there is solid ground.
Which was why Maddox could not marry her at sea, but they had reached solid ground 10 days past.
Throat thick, she said, But it is true that you must be married upon it?
That is truth, and it is where Aran stands when he is named.
With a lift of his chin, he indicated the tent where Maddox was. Surprise burned away her hurt. Is that what they are doing now, naming him Ran? He shook his head.
All must raise their voice. But the leaders of the tribes and the clans will speak first with him and hear what he has to say, so they may carry it back to their people, who will know whether he is worthy of speaking for all of us.
What will they ask of him?
Many things.
Bannock stirred the fire, sending up crackling sparks.
Likely they began with grief for Ran Ashev and Ran Merrick. Then they would ask the questions that their clans and tribes want to know of a warrior who might be Ran, and of the woman he would make his queen.
They will ask him about me?
So they will.
And what they know of me might influence whether the Parsathians name him Ran?
It will.
And Maddox might not become king if they did not approve of her? She looked toward the tent in renewed frustration.
I would rather speak for myself.
Bannock grinned.
In time they will call you before them. Our gathering is not set yet, and never have we been pushed to name Aran even as another army approaches. Likely they will decide to delay the true gathering until that battle is fought, because your father's death will change much.
So it would. She would be more patient then, as Bannock was. As Bannock was with her especially. From the day we met, you have been a good friend to me, she told him now. I am grateful for it. A smile touched his mouth.
As I am grateful to you. Much have you given me.
I do not feel as if I have.
But it is truth.
A touch of melancholy came over his face as he stirred the fire again.
All that I loved was lost when the destroyer came. There were many of us left with emptied hearts. Some filled theirs again with children and family, others with rage.
As Danos' mother had. Or purpose, Yvonne said quietly, as her mother had, as Maddox's parents had. He nodded.
Mine. I did not fill it again, not with wife or children. I was afraid to lose it all again. I have fought these many years, and I have always done what was needed to be done, whether it was standing against the savages on the lave or slaying a dark warlord. Yet it was merely doing, because there was nothing else for me.
Sometimes doing was all that was left, and then all that mattered was the manner of fighting and doing.
But you have fought and done it all honorably. Vela herself noted it.
So I have. And so she did.
His voice thickened.
And her favor gladdened my heart. Yet it is what you have set forward that has filled it. Because I do not merely fight, now I fight for something, and my heart as full as I never thought it would be again.
Throat aching, she asked softly, Do you think then that you will now have that wife and child? His rusty laugh broke out.
No, this pleases me. This purpose I have now. Serving as armor for my Ran and his bride.
And perhaps he still could not bear to lose so much again. Her heart full, she said nothing for a long moment. Do you miss the raids? He responded with a side-to-side head motion that meant there was no truthful or easy answer to give, and then they both glanced up as Maddox and the dragon joined them, along with Nami and Ciri, and the woman whom Yvonne had been briefly introduced to before he disappeared into the tent, Enox, his first captain. A strange combination of expressions they wore. She saw tension and unease, as if perhaps the gathering had not gone well. Or perhaps it was only the battle ahead and the knowledge that her father's army lay not far south. Maddox's face she could not easily read, though he seemed not tense.
I would hear this too,
Maddox said, settling down beside her.
All that I have known of raids are legends and songs, and many among our tribes feel as if we are not truly the riders of the Burning Plains if we are not also raiders.
Was that one of the questions posed to you? He gave a quick smile.
It was, but I would hear Bannock's answer.
The old warrior's reply began on a heavy sigh.
I would give much to raid again, though when those dreams come to me, it is not the treasures or valuables that I wish to have. It is the nights by the fire with my sister and fellow warriors. It is the laughter we shared and the excitement of it, of concealing ourselves so carefully as a caravan would pass, and then my sister farting so loudly that she gave away our hiding spot. What I miss is not the theft, it is what we shared, and is what many warriors still share in the Parsathian army, or here with the dragon. I suspect that is why I have always been part of the Alliance Army. There are many moments that are the same.
Except the farting is usually Keeler, Artel said, though emotion burned in her eyes, as if she had been deeply affected by Bannock's words. As had Yvonne, for she had shared so many similar joys and excitement and dangers while traveling with them. She looked to Matic. And what was your answer?
Much the same,
he said.
But also that in those legends and songs, a raider's honor was in never stealing from those in need and always taking from those who had plenty, from nobles, from kings. No true harm was ever done, they said, and if any raider took from someone in need, always he made amends. That is truth,
Bannock said.
But it is not a full truth,
Matic countered quietly.
Allies we have made of Sissia and Rugus, and so we trade now instead of raid them for riches. But in that alliance, other friendships have we made, and we have learned much about their kings and nobles that we once stole from, enough to know that stealing from them harmed those in need, either because a generous king would have passed on those riches to feed or clothe his people, or because a greedy king would extract from his people the cost of what was stolen. Always the most needy and vulnerable paid for our raids in some way.
Yvonne's heart had swelled all the more as he spoke. She knew not what the Parsathians in that tent might have thought of such an answer, yet to her it was the finest of responses. And it was not one of the lessons she had given him, though many similar conversations they'd had while sailing north. So perhaps she had been in that tent with him in some way after all. But the battle in the throne room was over for now. A far different battle lay ahead. What was decided regarding my father?
We ride south at first light,
Enoch said. A full day of travel, and perhaps a day more of messages sent and demands made. Then if her father did not surrender, the fighting would begin. Throat tight, Yvonne nodded. She had not been fully prepared to face her brother, but much had changed, and so many warriors' lessons she'd had, lessons that had sharpened her mind as well as her bow.
You will not ride with us,
Matic told her, gently, as if he knew what a blow it would be, and yet still, it left her reeling. Not ride with you? What sense did that make? He brings Sissian soldiers with him. They will listen to me and— Matic shook his head.
We know not what lies he might have told them. Just as your brother tried to paint you as a demon, he might claim that we have forced you to send any message. No doubt he will tell them this is a rescue, and to ignore all else until you are securely in his possession again.
Enoch nodded.
If your father's sole purpose is to reclaim you, then we must not make it easy by taking you to him.
That was sensible, and yet, those are my people you will be raising swords against, she told Matic in anguish. My soldiers you will kill to reach him. Let me try to persuade them to raise their swords against my father instead.
I swear to you that I will reach out my hand to them,
he vowed gruffly.
The soldier you send to the council with your brother's corpse.
Jeppin.
You asked him to tell the others that you would return and that your father's rule would end. You told him that you went with me willingly. If that word has spread, then you may have already persuaded them.
Perhaps, though she knew it was a thin hope. So I am to stay here?
No, this camp will be near to empty and is the most obvious place for him to search for you after he realizes you are not with us. Instead, we will hide you away.
She did not want to be hidden away. But in this it seemed she had little say too. Throat thick, she asked, Where? He held out his hand.
I will show you.
Chapter 35. Yvonne. They rode west and north, with dread tightening in Yvonne's gut all the way, for tomorrow would see Matic leaving to fight her father's army and her own people, and nothing she would know of what happened there until two or three more days had passed. As the sun was setting, Matic drew closer to Yvonne's mount.
There it is.
With a lift of his chin, he gestured ahead, yet Yvonne saw nothing, only grass and fire bloom all the way to the horizon. When she looked to him in confusion, he grinned at her.
We make use of what we have. We have not many stones to build walls, and the dirt crumbles too easily to make good bricks, so this is our defense instead.
She looked again. But I see nothing.
That is what it is. Come.
He nudged his mount to a quicker pace, and she followed suit.
Keep watching.
Watching nothing. Until there was something. A slight ridge upon the ground ahead. As they drew nearer, a depression became visible, deep enough to conceal tents dyed to match the grasses. In astonishment, she looked to him.
There was nothing.
It is only a trick of the eye. Even from a short distance, there is nothing to see, only the plain. An enemy either would be lucky or must know where it is to find anyone hidden within a hollow.
So it seemed. Still bemused by the cleverness of that disguise, she rode with him into the small encampment. The dragon rode behind them along with 24 other warriors who would stay secluded here, hiding her away so her father could not find her and so that she would not suffer at his hands. Yet the goddess almost never spoke clearly, and although Even did not like to dwell on what couldn't be known, she began to wonder if the suffering Jalen would inflict on her would not be physical pain, for Madoc had seen so well to her protection, an entire army stood between her father and her. But that distance between Madoc and her father would be erased, and if Madoc did not return from this battle, if Jalen killed him, Even would truly suffer. She knew not if the same dread filled Madoc, but they had barely finished tending to their horses before he caught her up against his chest, carrying her to a private tent. Inside, he kissed her, and it was with frantic need that she kissed him back. One night she had before he would leave, and then so much time would pass. Already those days were agony, and only by touching him could Even seem to hold them back. Fiercely she returned every caress, and his urgency matched hers. Rough he was, rougher than he'd ever been, his grip tight upon her arms and legs as he held her wrists to plunder her mouth and then devour her cunt, yet she wanted the bruises he might leave. She wanted to still feel his touch within her while he was gone, and Madoc fucked her so hard and so long that he must have wanted the same. Over and over he had her, kissing until she was breathless, making her scream and scratch and come. On her back, then riding him, then from behind, his grunts harsh in her ear as he branded himself on her, inside her. Then he held her against him, her scarred back to his strong chest, arms wrapped around her and breathing in her hair. So quiet the tent was, only filled with the sound of their breaths. She could not bear to sleep. Sleep would only bring him closer to leaving. Into the dark she whispered, "Did you think the tribe leaders would not approve of me?" For perhaps that was why he'd waited to marry her, though they'd been on Temra's altar. He might not have known whether he would have to choose between his bride and becoming Ran.
"No."
His voice was a quiet rumble.
"All doubts were settled."
What doubts were those? For she wanted very much to know what doubts might rise again in the future.
"About whether any lies were spoken."
"Oh, that might change their vote if I had spoken lies?"
"It would."
"Not might, but would. So it was fortunate then that Madoc had accepted that she'd spoken truth about his mother, though his vow still stood while he was changing the habit of his view." His hand swept up her arm as if in reassurance.
"You have no need to worry. They know that it was justified."
She frowned, turning within his arm so that she might see his face, shadowed though it was. His eyes were closed and his voice had roughened in that lazy, drowsy way he had before drifting to sleep. "What was justified?"
"The lie you spoke, that my mother approved of you as my bride."
He still did not believe her? Yvonne's heart tightened painfully and she sucked in a sharp breath. His eyes flew open even as she said, "That was no lie."
"Yvonne."
"It was no lie," she said again, more forcefully. "I have never lied to you."
"It matters not."
He caught her face in his hands.
"My claws were at your throat. You lied to save your life. It was justified."
"Justified? I need no justification. I spoke truth." Eyes closing, he pressed his forehead to hers.
"Do you fear I will abandon you for it? I will never. We are allies. I know all else you have said to me is true."
So sweetly he dug his claws beneath her breast. So gently he tore out her heart. Throat raw, as if filled with bloody wounds, she asked him, "This is what you said to the tribes? That I lied, but it was justified?"
"I did, and they agreed."
"All of them? Did your dragon say so too?"
"They did. Of how we had attacked your carriage, seeking vengeance, and how you persuaded me to let you live, and then they spoke in support of you."
"But did no one suggest that I might have spoken true? Did no one suggest that I might come and speak for myself instead of accepting your view of it? Is it so impossible to believe that she might have approved of me?"
"No,"
he said quietly.
"In time she would have, as they do, as I do."
Yet he still thought her claim had been a lie, though justified. "So all is well," she said thickly.
"It is."
Kissing her softly, he lay back again, drew her close. Soon he slept, because all was well. Yet it was not. Pressure behind her eyes and in her chest built, hot and aching. When she could bear it no longer, she carefully slipped out of his arms and collected her robe. Barely did she make it outside before her tears began to fall, and then there, too, she had to hold them back. For at the small fire were Keeler, Nami, and Ciri sitting together, with Nami holding her daughter close. Everywhere were warriors quietly talking, and others had slipped away as she and Matic had done. Because the Parsathians did not leave anything left unsaid, and before a battle they took extra care to speak what needed to be spoken. Yet what had Matic said to her? That she was still a liar. Even though she insisted over and over again that it was truth, she was a justified liar. As if that made a difference when it meant he still did not trust her word. When he had said that never could he love a woman whose word he could not trust. She had hoped so desperately that he had become entangled, so desperately she had wished for his heart. Yet nothing had he said of love or affection, only of being allies, only of protecting her. And no longer could she hold back the tears. Through the blurring of her eyes and the dark, she searched for somewhere alone. She found it at the edge of the hollow, where a small stream spilled into a pool that reflected the bright stars above. No moon there was this night. Vela's face was turned away, so even the goddess would not witness these tears. How long Yvain cried she knew not, but these were the marks that this night would leave. The ragged wound of her heart, the raw ache of her throat, those would last far longer than his touch. She should never have hoped for so much. Chapter 36 Matic. In the bed, Yvain's face was pale, her eyes raw, as if she had spent part of the night crying. With a heavy sigh, Matic crouched beside the bed. He hated to wake her. Yet dawn neared, and he already had extra distance to cover before catching up with the army. He ought to have sent her here with Bannock and remained at the camp, yet he had needed this night with her. And it appeared that she'd needed it too. Hers were not the only tears shed this night, he knew. Many warriors would ride into battle soon, and not all would return. Many would say words that needed to be said, not knowing if opportunity would come again. For most it would. Jalen would not defeat the Parsathian army. The numbers he'd brought to the burning plains were but a small fraction of those riding against him, all that Yvain knew. Yet there would likely be warriors lost, and her soldiers. Even Matic was at risk. Matic knew not how to ease her fears except by returning. Softly he kissed her, waking her gently. As always, she came out of sleep with a single blink. With his hand cradling her cheek, he told her quietly,
"We are ready to ride out."
She sat up on a shuddering breath. "Already?" He kissed her again in answer. Her hands caught his face, her lips trembling against his. So sweet this was. Sheer emotion he could taste in this kiss. If he could but stay here longer, Matic would try to draw words from her tongue that matched all that her kiss said. Yet first he would make certain that she never suffered at her father's hand. Drawing back, he told her fiercely,
"I will bring you his head."
She gave a quivering smile. "Perhaps his heart, too."
"I will bring both upon a pike so you might shoot your arrows through them."
His thumbs brushed down her cheeks.
"But your soldiers, I will do all I can to keep them alive and bring them here too, as they will rejoice to see you."
"Thank you," she whispered, and he kissed her yet again. From outside came the snort and stamp of waiting horses and warriors. Reluctantly, he released her.
"I will send word as quickly as I can."
On a shuddering breath, she nodded. Never had leaving a tent been so difficult that when she called his name and he turned to find her limping toward him, nothing could have moved him another step away from her. Her eyes were bright and shadowed both, as if she held back the painful tears that thickened her voice. "Nothing should be left unsaid. Is that truth?" What had she left to say to him? All that he'd felt on her kiss? So similar it seemed to what burned in his own heart, which was not gentle but fierce, so fierce that he feared that his might blow out her spark if he did not take care. But if her fire already burned like his, then he had not as much to fear.
"It is truth."
It was not a fire that burned as she stopped in front of him, though her chin was lifted and her fists clenched. Not since her moon night had she looked so utterly fragile, so ready to shatter.
"Then I need to say, you can have your freedom from me."
He could make no sense of that.
"What freedom?"
Her chest lifted on a small, agonized breath. "From any obligation you feel to marry me. When you return with my father's head, the agreement we made will be complete. We will have our vengeance.
I'll claim my throne, and you can then choose a bride who you believe is more suited to you.
Was this a jest?
You are suited to me.
You do not truly believe that. It was a ragged whisper, because never did you think that I might be speaking the truth, because you tell me that, in time, your mother would have approved of me. Yet we spent 3 turns of the moon together in my tower, Matic, more time than I have spent with you. Yet still you refuse to believe that it might be truth. You believe so strongly I have lied that you tell all of Parsath that I have spoken it. And so after my father is dead, I will return to Sissia as a queen, but no longer a bride.
No air seemed to fill his chest. Instead, it roared in his ears, and he shook his head, denying what he'd heard, refusing to believe that he'd heard it.
You will not marry me?
No, she said on broken breath. I will not.
This he could not believe. Already she'd spoken a vow.
To Vela, you swore that you would take no other.
And I will not.
Her eyes closed, but not before he saw the gleaming there.
You carry my child, he said.
An unfair weapon it was, but a warrior made use of what he had, and he was desperate enough to use anything.
It is too early to know for certain.
Matic was certain.
It has been 1.5 turns since your moon night, and you have not bled.
I have never regularly bled.
Her eyes opened, and the new resolve he saw in them was a blade through his heart.
But even if I am with child, we need not marry. Many Sissian queens do not, and I will not deny your right to her. She will know you as her father and spend her time between our realms. She will be the best of Parsath and Sissia, and we will still have a strong alliance.
Marriage will make it stronger.
But it will also be strong without it. We are both resolved to the same purposes, to strengthen the alliance and to kill my father. He has arrived here as you hoped he would, so your vengeance is at hand. Whether I am your bride or not, I know you will help me build a new alliance. The only reason I have to marry would be for my own happiness. And I have no hope of that.
No happiness in a marriage with him? Gutted, Matic stared at her. Those were not words from a sharpened tongue, for she sounded dull and hollow, as if her chest were as empty as his.
Why?
He asked hoarsely.
Because I did not lie to you, she burst out. I have never lied to you. If I did not believe your word, how insulted would you be? Do you think that because I am not Parsathian, my heart and honor are not torn apart by your disbelief? And not only did you say this to me when we were alone, you have told all of Parsath that I am a liar. And you seem not to care that it is your own untruth that you spread, simply because you will not trust my word. Would you tell our children too? Should I spend the years trying to explain to them why their father does not respect me enough to believe everything I have to say, or even to listen to what I have to say? What happiness would I know in such a marriage?
No words did Matic value more than hers, and no heart did he have left. Everything she said was of truth and left a bleeding wound in his chest. But he would not lose her like this.
I listen to you now. When I return, we will speak more of this. You will tell me all of what my mother said and did.
For they had not enough time now, but he would extract a promise from her not to immediately leave. But she shook her head.
What point is there when you are stubbornly certain of my lie? You promised to look at me from another view, but in this matter you never attempted to. You held on to your belief that it was a lie, and made a vow that prevented me from ever saying what was truth, and so never did you try to truly change your view. Everything I say will be seen through that view, which you still think is not true.
I swear I will not. I rescind that vow, and I believe what you say now.
In truth he did. She did not wear the proof of his mother's crest, but Yvain's truth he believed, for she cut out her own heart to tell him. He took her face in his hands, felt the hotness of her cheeks that was the flush of unshed tears, saw her eyes close, as if his touch were agony. Voice raw with emotion, he said,
You say to me that I should return and choose a bride suited to me and that my mother would have approved, so I will, Yvain, and she will be you.
And what then? Will I hope and then be hurt? So many times with you I have hoped and been hurt and hoped and been hurt again.
Her lips trembled and she turned her face against his hand. In a pained whisper, she said,
I have so little hope left, Matic.
Again that dull, dull blade.
I will choose you,
he said hoarsely.
And never will I hurt you again. You need only stay, and we will talk, and you will see.
For such a long time she was silent, hurting. Then she nodded once, and relief filled his chest. Catching her trembling bottom lip between her teeth, she finally looked up at him. Such faint hope he saw there amid the unshed tears. He wondered if this was what his mother had seen the first time, with Yvonne fevered and her back slashed open, so near to defeat. Yet it was not her father who had brought her to this point. Again, it was Madoc. So much he would have to make up for, but he could not yet.
I must ride. So much I would say to you, my bride, but I vow this. I will return, I will marry you, and I will see you happy.
A spark more hope returned. On a shuddering breath, she nodded again. Hard he kissed her mouth, then made himself leave into the cold morning. His warriors waited, some of them smirking as if assuming what had kept him so late. Nearby stood Ciri, arms folded and with a mutinous jut to her chin, most likely because her mother had forbidden her to join them. Yet judging by the girl's expression and the repressive look that Keeler sent her, Ciri would only wait until they were out of sight before following behind.
Ciri of Firebloom, daughter of Nami and Kaelin!
Madoc barked. She startled, pivoting to face him. When her eyes met his, he told her,
Madoc guards my bride, but he is of my dragon, my armor. I would have you be Yvonne's, and to continue her hunting lessons while we are away, as she would have no better teacher.
Her expression softened with surprise, and she only seemed torn for a moment before new purpose settled her features into proud, determined lines. I will, she vowed. Nami gave him a grateful look as he reached his horse. Mounting quickly, he swept his gaze to the eastern sky, already bright with the approach of dawn. Madoc! He reined the horse around to see Yvonne limping toward him, her face still pale and eyes still shadowed, but not in so much pain. She carried a small velvet pouch and was digging through it, pulling out jewels, strands of gold, as if she meant to bestow a token upon him, as young lovers did. He would not stay to kiss her rubies then, but wear them into battle.
What do you have for me?
For your vengeance. I made no mention of it before, because I feared you might think it was akin to speaking with sly tongue, or you might believe I'd stolen it and cut off my thumb. Her voice was wry, but laced with real pain as she continued digging through the pouch. But now that your vow is rescinded, I can give it to you, to wear next to your father's as you cut off Jalen's head. His mother's crest. She placed it into Madoc's palm, and for a long moment there was nothing inside him. All this time she'd had it, and it was his own vow that had made her fearful of showing him, not just the crest, but the seam bent to fit a smaller finger, and a symbol roughly etched beside the dragon of Ranbantic's tribe, a crescent moon, the sigil of the House of Nyset. The weight of that small silver ring in his palm seemed to drag Madoc from the horse, for he had no memory of dismounting before he stood before her.
You cannot give this to me,
he rasped, his throat raw.
She has pinched it to fit your thumb.
You could wear it on your smallest.
I could not even. Even if it did fit, I would not. This is not the crest of a warrior who has fallen, but one who lives.
One who belonged to both Sissia and Parsath, not merely a crest offered to show approval, but far more.
This mark adopts you into the dragon tribe. She has made you a daughter of the Burning Plains. Only you can wear this.
He took her hand. His own fingers shook as he slid it over her thumb, and then he brought her hand to his mouth and kissed her crest so fiercely. There was sudden silence from the riders behind him, who saw what Yvonne wore now, who understood what it meant. She had not lied. She had never lied. Even without this proof, Madoc would have married her and had come to believe her, though almost too late. Now this crest would help combat the lie that he had spread about her. The consequences of that, Madoc would have to face later. Most likely it would be said that his doubt had been justified, but he cared not what was decided. He would bear anything, because the one consequence that he couldn't bear had already been thwarted. So close had he come to losing her, so very close, because of a vow made in grief and rage and haste, but a clear view he had of her now, and a much clearer view of himself. Chapter 37. Madoc.
The wolves are uneasy.
Madoc glanced over at the two dogs circling restlessly in front of Fassad's mount, their lips raised in snarls.
Dogs are always uneasy near the Scourge,
Keeler said.
The demon's foul magic lingers here. Perhaps,
Fassad agreed, staring ahead.
Except I am uneasy too.
Keeler shot a glance at Madoc, one that said his friend could not truthfully reassure the others because he was uneasy too. As was Madoc. Much different it was from the constriction in his chest as they'd ridden south the previous day, when Yvonne's hopeless gaze seemed always before him. A constriction that increased whenever the crest was mentioned again, along with idle wondering if she hadn't known what the gift meant, and that was why she'd hidden it for so long. But she had hidden it for good reason, and had been right to. For in truth, if she had presented that crest to Maddock, he would have believed it stolen. At the beginning, he had been stubborn in his certainty that his mother would not have chosen such as her. So even if she'd given him proof, he would have doubted. That shame had been a festering wound in his chest as they'd ridden south. This unease and prickling tightness over his skin was not the same. The sun was rising to the east. Facing the scourge, the Parsathians were lined up on their mounts, 1,000 riders strong, with Maddock and his dragon at the center. The Sicyon soldiers at the scourge's base would see but a line of riders across the horizon. It was those soldiers who should be uneasy. They were already in formation, 10 by 10, only 100 in number. These were the soldiers from the Sicyon outpost. The bulk of the might Jalen had brought was in the Rugusian army, 300 more in number, not in sight, but instead gathered behind the scourge.
"Did they think to conceal their numbers from us?"
Torek asked. Maddock shook his head. He knew not what the purpose of it was, and that likely added to his unease. Enox rode up, the faint light catching in the silver beads in her hair.
"Our scout reports the same. Rugusians waiting behind, only Sicyons ahead."
"Do they have a position on Jalen?"
"So that Maddock might kill him." Enox shook her head.
"Not yet."
"It makes no sense."
Artle spoke what they all thought.
"We cannot see them, but whoever is their command can also not see us."
No, they could not.
"What of the scourge? Might they have archers hidden in the ruins?"
"Not that I have yet seen or heard reported from my scouts."
So there were only the Sicyon soldiers who posed an immediate threat.
"I will ride forward and appeal to Aven's soldiers as I promised."
Enox nodded. An alarm she would give if any new threat appeared. Keeler raised a flag signaling that they only approached to speak. Trotting forward, Maddock studied the Sicyons. No clear leader was there among them. None were mounted. Where would an order come from?
"Movement at the head of the scourge!"
Dano called.
"Drapa?"
Torek asked.
"There is a nest in the eye."
"There is a gleam of metal!"
From armor or weapon. Yet the scourge's head was a poor position to take. The ruins were so huge that an archer standing between the eyes might only hit a target as distant as the scourge's nose, and could be no threat to anyone near the scourge's belly. Maddock neared the Sicyons, his unease lifting the hairs over his skin. For not only were none of the soldiers mounted, neither were they armed. Instead, they only wore heavy armor, their arms strapped with vambraces jutting with spikes. He slowed his horse, the dragon doing the same. No soldier would wear such armor. Too easy it would be in battle to stab one's own face or chest, though these were well protected in both face and chest. By the orange torchlight, Maddock could see little within the close-plated helms, only the wetness of drool that stained chins green, as if they'd been eating grass. Realization gripped his chest.
"Fall back!"
Spinning his horse about, he shouted again.
"Fall back!"
Snarling and roaring came from behind him, a wave of brainless beasts unleashed. With 100 poisoned soldiers after them, the dragon raced back to the Parsathian line.
"Silac venom!"
Keeler yelled.
"But they were held!"
Just as revenants had once been held at a stream, though humans could not be made revenants, and never had Maddock heard of a poisoned beast waiting for anything, so he knew not how it had been done, but it had been.
"It must be Ezel!"
Ahead he could see the Parsathians readying for the soldiers' charge, but they still didn't know what came behind them.
"Is there a familiar?"
"No birds!"
Danos shouted. But the sorcerer would need eyes on the soldiers to control them. Realization hit them all at once, but it was Artle who yelled it.
"He's on the scourge's head!"
And so too would Maddock be, but not yet. He galloped along the line.
"Fight by two!"
he shouted.
"Bludgeon to hold, blade to kill, by two, bludgeon and blade!"
For the soldiers were armored so well they would not be easily struck down, but a blunt force might knock them back long enough for a blade to find a mark. He pulled up alongside Enox. Their horses had outpaced the rampaging soldiers, yet soon they would be upon them.
"That is why the Rugusian soldiers are hidden behind,"
he told her, chest heaving.
"So not to draw notice when the beasts are released."
Which also meant whatever control Ezel had over them was not absolute, if he could not make them distinguish between Parsathian and Rugusian. An angry gleam flashed through her eyes.
"Should we draw notice to them?"
"By riding around the ruins with the beasts following.
As you will. The sorcerer must be on the Scourge, and perhaps Jalen with him. I will take my dragon with me.
She nodded. Ride as one. As silver-fingered Rani did, as Death did, though she had already come for the soldiers. Many times in the past day, Matic had wondered whether Yvain ought to have accompanied them. She was well protected, yet not having her near was a fear in itself, that he couldn't stop what might harm her. Yet he was fiercely glad she hadn't seen this, her soldiers poisoned, sacrificed and changed into beastly weapons instead of allowing them to fight of their own will, turned into brainless animals that the Parsathians would have to put down. Jalen must have feared that the soldiers wouldn't be loyal to him. Leading the charge, Enox raced down the line and 1,000 warriors thundered after her. Remaining in place, horses snorting and stamping, Matic and his dragon watched the brainless soldiers turn in that direction.
When we have a clear path.
The ground shook. His mount snorted, prancing uneasily. A great boom followed, as if thunder were right upon them. The galloping army transformed from a flying arrow to whirling confusion, like leaves scattered on a stream. 1,000 horses screamed in fright, the warriors upon them staring in terror as the ruins in front of them moved. The mountain of obsidian shifted and heaved, cracking and shattering, like an old man stretching his bones after a long sleep. The Scourge was rising.
Temra, be merciful,
Torek said, his voice full of horror. Matic shook his head. He would not pray for that. That goddess only showed mercy to the dead.
Fly to the Scourge,
he commanded.
Fly!
As one, Matic and his dragon raced toward the monster that was awakening. Chapter 38. Yvain. Yvain's satchel spilled from her hands to the bed as foul, cold, strong magic sliced down the back of her neck. Gasping, she braced her hands in the furs, her head swimming.
Yvain!
Ciri hauled open the flap of the tent.
You must come see this!
Heart pounding, Yvain followed her outside. It was just after sunrise, but the sun was still low on the horizon, the hollow still in shadow. Only a short time ago she'd risen from her restless sleep. The rest of the camp was still awakening. Fires being stoked, breakfasts cooking. But the warriors had abandoned those fires and breakfasts. Yvain looked to the sky, searching for birds. High above, geese arrowed north. No others could she see.
This way!
Ciri grabbed her hand. As fast as she could make her leg move, Yvain followed her to the southern edge of the hollow, where Bannock stood watching something in the distance. She had been warned not to climb the steep sides of the hollow, or her presence might break the illusion of unbroken plain from outside. Yet all of the warriors stood on the rim looking southeast, where the Scourge was rising. Sheer dread and horror gripped her throat. The mountainous heap of black rock shifted higher, like a beast it was, six limbs topped by a horned head. The face resembled a skull, with gaping eye sockets and nasal cavities, the cheeks deep hollows above a jaw full of razored teeth. When the demon had lived within the monster, those cavities were filled with fire and molten rock. But now, they were cold and dark.
It is Ezel, she whispered, staring. He is doing this.
In pale blue robes, one of his eyes nothing but a puckered scar. The movement of his body faintly echoed the movement of the Scourge, careful and slow. Guards surrounded him, bracing themselves as the head swayed.
Riders from the east!
A warrior called out the alert. Yvain glanced east, squinting against the rising sun that was directly behind the approaching riders.
What do you see?
Bannock asked.
I cannot.
Shielding her face, she tried to see through the glare of Enom's eye. She could make out little.
Red linens at the front, helms behind. They ride two abreast, but I cannot see how many.
Parsathians leading southerners?
Bannock squinted too.
Perhaps the Alliance Council has arrived.
For they had heard at the camp that Gareth had reached the council, and there was word of them coming north.
I cannot be certain.
A choked noise from Ciri drew her gaze back to the south, where the Scourge was rising in full. In ruins it had lain on its side. Her brother had managed to get its legs beneath it, and it rose ever higher. Tears standing in her eyes, Ciri gave a sobbing breath.
My mother and brother are there!
Matic, too. With her heart a burning lump in her throat, she watched Ezel take a slow step, and the Scourge did the same.
My lady,
Bannock said in a low voice,
wait for me in your tent. Ciri, go with her. Make ready your bow and arrow, Yvain.
What is it?
The old man was watching the approach of the riders.
Parsathians do not gallop in such close formation unless they are on a road.
As she'd learned while crossing these plains, better to not have dirt clods flung into the face of those riding behind. Enam glared so bright at their backs, eyes watering, she shook her head. I still cannot see.
It matters not. We will know soon enough if they are friend or foe,
Bannock said, and she realized all of the warriors had torn their attention from the scourge.
Go now.
Heart thundering, Yvain went. Chapter 39 Matic.
I wish now that those songs told us how Bran Bantic killed the Scourge,
Keeler shouted over the thunder of galloping hooves. Matic grinned, wind rushing his face as they raced alongside the enormous ruins. The Scourge was rising, but a slow and lumbering rise it was.
It matters not,
he yelled back.
Because we are united?
Keeler's exasperation came clearly through his shout.
Because it is not the Scourge.
Not a demon, only a puppet, controlled by the true monster, Easel. Reaching the quaking mountain, Matic swiftly climbed onto the second leg, still folded beneath the beast. The horses could not follow, and with a slap to the rump, he sent his away again. The warriors scrambled after him, wolves nimbly racing up the rough surface of pitted volcanic rock and sharp obsidian. Matic had no time for care as he ran toward the gaping canyon that had once been the Scourge's stomach, until silver-fingered Rani had split it open to retrieve her dragon.
Into the belly!
Matic called out. Vasad sent his wolves ahead.
Are we not climbing to the head?
There is a better way to reach it,
Matic told him. Dano and Vasad exchanged glances, Vasad from the northern storm tribe, Dano from the central fist. Neither had spent any time playing among these ruins as children.
The throat,
he said. A dark tunnel it was, of slick obsidian. Dano flared a stick torch and the gleaming sides threw light far up the channel. Together they raced upward. With heaving breaths, his face dripping sweat, Keeler said,
Beginning tomorrow, I will run beside my mount more often. I am on fire.
It is not only that, Ardal said grimly. The air is hotter.
It was true. The air shimmered with heat. Toric's face blanched.
Has Ezel reignited the furnace of the heart? In a scourge that could spit fire,
Fasad said.
And we are headed for the mouth. Faster!
Matic told them, and sprinted up the throat, which was at more of an upward angle now than when they had been younger and the beast was lying on its side. Thighs burning with effort, he climbed the last stretch to the top of the throat and reached back to help his warriors up. No time did they have to rest. They were in the back of the mouth, and the heat billowing upward from the Scourge's heart was like standing too near a fire. Matic ran across the pitted volcanic tongue, where wind whistled through the closed jaw. Easel had not opened the cavernous mouth, but it was no cage. The huge teeth had gaps that even warriors of Matic's size could slip through. He looked out now, bracing himself against the slow swaying of the head. Below, the Parsathian army had regrouped against the brainless soldiers. The Scourge was not yet advancing on them, every movement it made ponderous, careful. He looked to Dano.
Where was Easel standing?
Between the eyes.
Matic looked up. Far above, in the ceiling of the mouth, a crevice opened up to the sky above, the nasal cavity, like a vent through the face.
Perhaps we might climb up the inside of the mouth to reach that and up to the face, Ardal said, but I do not think we want to linger here for long.
Matic did not think so either. An orange glow lit the back of the throat.
Keeler, Fasad, and I will climb up the cheek.
They rose like cliffs against the flat, broad nose.
Ardal will lead Toric and Dano around the back of the head and come down from the horns. We will approach Easel and any guards he has from two directions.
Ardal knew these ruins as well as Keeler and he.
It will take us longer.
We will wait on the cheek.
Nodding, she headed for the teeth. Matic followed, then the others. The wolves wriggled through, sure-footedly making their way along the edge of the jaw and back to the hinge, where Matic, Keeler, and Fasad would climb the slope of the cheek toward the eye, and Ardal would lead the others behind. Wind buffeted the face of the Scourge, whipping at his linens. Still, the sorcerer made no swift movements, likely for the same reason Matic feared that those swift movements would begin. Climbing beneath the eye socket, he glanced over at Keeler.
Ezel is afraid of falling off.
The other warrior grunted with amusement.
The whelp didn't think this through. Matic?
Fasad's grim voice pulled his gaze farther down.
The teeth?
Molten rock dripped out between the gaps.
The heat from within the mouth had not penetrated the rock they climbed, but the liquid fire steamed the air and fell to the ground, where flame sprang up amid the grasses. These plains would not burn again. Jaw set with determination, Matta climbed higher. The bulge of the eye socket hid them from view of the face. A chirp nearby turned Maddox's head. That sound he'd heard from Danok countless times, yet this one was not hers. An infant Drapa. Maddox froze. Seeing the raptor, the other warriors followed suit. No fear did he have of the small reptile, but if that chirp became a squeal, an adult Drapa would appear. It chirped again, turning its angular head back and forth, the thin feathers around its neck waving with the movement. A full set of those thin feathers it would have when it grew, just as its little claws would become razor-sharp sickles to tear open a gut. The Drapa hopped closer, then hopped away. Into the cavity of the eye socket it disappeared. The molten stone dripping from the jaw had become a thick stream. The mouth was filling up with the fiery liquid. Steam poured from the vents above. They had to cross those vents to reach the broad plain of the face. Ardal could not be in place yet, but no longer could they wait, or they might be cooked while leaping across. He gestured to Keeler, who nodded. Fassad and the wolves readied.
I will jump across first, then follow.
During that jump, they would be exposed to any guards that Ezel might have waiting, so the others would cover while each one crossed. Drawing his sword, Matta gave the signal. As one, they surged up over the edge of the cheek, onto the flat plane of the face. He heard the shouts from Ezel's guards as he sprinted a short distance, then made a flying leap through a blistering wave of heat. He landed, then was pushed forward by an explosive burst of flames through vent.
Steel!
Fassad shouted from the other side of the curtain of fire. The wolf had jumped with Matic.
He is here!
He shouted to the warrior, then met the charge of a Ragusian soldier with his sword. His curved blade was made for slicing through flesh when mounted, and Matic had no frequent reason to use a sword against an armored man. Yet every armor had weaknesses and joints, and his blade swiftly tasted the soldier's blood and flesh. He heard Keeler's roar, and then the warrior's axe flew through the flames, slamming into another guard's armored chest. With a snarl, steel leapt for another, teeth slashing open the softest part of any man. The soldier's screams abruptly ended when he doubled over and the wolf ripped out his throat. Matic grabbed up Keeler's axe and raced to meet the next charge. Only a dozen guards. Those were fair enough odds. Snarling, he sliced open a gut, then met the next guard with silver claws through his neck. The heated glass stone beneath his boots grew slick with blood. The red haze of battle filled his vision. All the guards he seemed to see, knowing as they came close, when they would move past each other to strike. Well-trained they were, but trained they would always be. Against the untamed viciousness of Matic and the wolf they fell. The battle took them nearer the eye, the wolf at Matic's side when the guards' dwindling numbers made them regroup and, instead of charging as one, join up into concerted attack. Chest heaving, Matic defended against one sword and narrowly avoided the swing of another. With an upward slash, he split the guard's arm from his body and kicked him back, then charged the next. The Ragusian died swiftly, and Matic booted aside his head to meet the weakened swing from the guard's remaining hand. Only one left, and steel was on him. A pained yelp brought Matic racing, where the wolf wrestled wildly with the soldier, teeth clamped on the guard's arm, and both of them dangling over the eye socket. With an angry grunt, Matic cut off the guard's head and lurched forward to catch the wolf by the ruff before he fell into the Drapa's nest. He hauled back, and a streak of pain crossed his thigh. A crossbow bolt clattered against the stone. Teeth gritted, he dragged the wolf up, pivoting to face Ezel. The one-eyed sorcerer stood at a distance, watching Matic with a curious gaze and lowered his crossbow. Matic gave him a feral grin.
You have not your sister's aim.
I have no need of it,
Ezel said. Adjusting his grip on the bloodied handle of his sword, Matic advanced on him and staggered on the first step. Ezel tilted his head.
It's a quick poison.
Silac venom. Already leeching his strength. Grunting, Matic fell to his knees. He could barely hold his sword. The sorcerer smiled.
If only my father could see this.
Jalen.
Matic had promised Ivan his head and heart. He struggled to stand.
Where is he?
He has gone to retrieve my wayward sister.
Matic shook his head in denial.
He will not find her.
No. You have a spy among your own. We know where you have hidden her.
Matic's heartbeat pounded in his ears. Again he struggled and his boot slipped in blood. He crashed backward, and this time it was Steele who saved him from tumbling into the eye socket, the wolf clamping his teeth around Maddox Vambrace and pulling him from the edge. From below, he heard the Drapa's warning hisses.
"You fight, but you will not win,"
Easel told him now, slowly coming closer. The scourge swayed with each step, the wind whistling past Maddox's face.
"My sister thinks to build an alliance against the Destroyer. But when everyone sees the power I have, when they see how I have crushed the Parsathian army, they will unite instead under me."
"Crush the Parsathian army?"
Maddox gave a hoarse laugh, then spit green foam before telling him,
"You think this number is all we have? You will need a bigger monster."
"In time."
Amusement lit the sorcerer's eye.
"Are you still trying to come after me with that sword? A fine weapon you will be against my enemies. Revenants have minds filled with hunger, but the Silac venom leaves nothing, and it is so much easier to fill those emptied brains with one thought. To stand, to attack. What thought will I put into your head?"
"To slay you."
Difficult it was now to even sit up.
"Monster!"
"Then lift your sword against me, warrior."
Maddox shook his head.
"Vela told me that a warrior relies too much on his sword."
"Did she?"
Easel laughed.
"So you will not swing it at me and hope that the goddess will save you in reward for learning a lesson?"
With this poison in him, nothing would save Maddox.
"I expect nothing from a goddess, and so I will use my sword one last time."
Grinning, Easel spread his hands.
"If you can make it this far, I will give you one swing."
Maddox was not going anywhere. Rolling onto his stomach and dragging himself to the edge of the eye socket took all his strength, as did shoving his sword across the slippery obsidian. He did rely on his sword, so he let it go. Like an arrow, it fell downward into the Drapa nest and speared one of the raptors in the haunches. A screech tore through the air, echoing from that cavern. Heaving himself back, Maddox reached for steel.
"Dead!"
he commanded gruffly. Instantly, the wolf lay against him. No effort it was for Maddox to remain still as the screeches rose in number. In a rush of clicking claws and racing feet, the reptiles poured out of the nest. Utterly still, Maddox didn't look to see Easel fleeing, but the jerk of the scourge's head and the whipping jolt of the rock beneath him joined the sorcerer's screams. Then a harder jolt, as if the mountain suddenly fell again. The flames jetting through the vents abruptly went out. Longer Maddox waited as the Drapa tore into the body and then carried the pieces back to the nest. Happy chirps from the infants soon followed. Steel whined and moved slightly, licking Maddox's face. Then Artle was rolling him over, tears streaming. She wiped the foam from his mouth.
"Don't sleep,"
she begged him. Keeler was there, his face a mask of anguish.
"Maddox!"
He took his hand in a crushing grip.
"It is done. Enix stopped the poisoned soldiers, and the Ragusians are on the run." "I am not done,"
he rasped. So little strength he had, even in his breath.
"My bride, take me to Yven."
He saw the look that passed between them, knew they thought it was impossible. A day's ride it was. Hoarsely he told them,
"There are words left unsaid."
"We will tell her for you,"
Artle vowed on sobbing breaths. Heart aching, Maddox shook his head.
"No one can say these."
Not if they were to mean anything. To hear love from someone else's lips only sounded like a platitude.
"You fool!"
Keeler snarled at him.
"You didn't tell her? You cock-brained fool!"
As if in a rage, the warrior hauled him up, slung Maddox's arm over his shoulder. Artle took the other side.
"Don't sleep,"
she commanded.
"Whatever it takes."
It would take all that was left of his strength, but it mattered not. Only Yven mattered now. Chapter 40. Yven. Sari raced ahead, collecting the sword and armor before catching up again with a slower Yven, and together they entered her tent. Forever they seemed to wait. With quiver on her shoulder and bow in hand, Yven stood surrounded by walls of mammoth hide, listening for any sounds from outside. The young warrior stood with her, breaths quick and sharp.
"I hate this. I hate not knowing what is happening. I feel so helpless."
As did Yven, but she had more experience with it. "We are not helpless. We are waiting for our opportunity to act." Sari nodded. Some of the tension in her shoulders eased, then stiffened again as a shout sounded. A scream, a howl of rage, the clash of a sword. Bannock slipped into the tent carrying a bloodied blade.
"Come, my lady, we must run."
The old warrior stopped abruptly, gaze dropping to her knee before rising again. For the longest moment his eyes held hers, and she agreed with all that he said in that silent look.
He turned to Ciri.
You must be a mouse, do you hear? Find 3 horses and meet us at the north end by the pool. Be silent and swift, and if you cannot find 3 mounts, then 1 will do.
Face Bloodbear, the girl nodded. Bannett crossed the tent, his curved blade slashing the hide at the back.
Through here, quickly!
Ciri darted through and vanished. Bannock followed. Yvain slipped through the gash into a swirl of choking smoke, then notched an arrow. The warrior stopped to listen. So many sounds she heard, a confusing clash of shouts and blades. Who has come? She whispered. The warrior's jaw tightened as if he would not answer. Then,
Jalen.
Her father. Terror struck at her heart. How did he find us? For the riders had been coming straight to the hollow as if they knew where it was. But no magic had Yvain felt before this morning, not since the revenant.